from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Yes, it is. It's Fresh Fridays right before the holiday. Happy holidays to all of you and your loved ones. And we so appreciate you guys hanging out with the G and Ursula Show. Be safe this weekend. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. This is always one of my favorite times of the week. And that's because we have our friend, Michael Medved, host of the Michael Medved Show on 770 KTTH. All of you know he's a Republican. He's also a presidential historian. And he joins us now for
What's New at 10.
Good morning, Michael.
Welcome back.
Yes, in studio.
Yes.
It's remarkable. It's great to see you both.
So great
you,
to see you, too.
And glad you're looking so well. It's been so long for me. I hadn't even realized that G was now bearded.
Bearded and married.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's the Abraham Lincoln look.
Yes, sir.
I think the beard's very becoming.
It's
very
thank
elegant.
You. Michael, we could not, we always can't wait to talk about you, but there's been a lot of stuff in the news, and of course, Ursula's going to get us started with that right now.
Yes. And so one of the top national stories, of course, was the bombshell testimony of White House aide Cassidy Hutchinson. Earlier this week, she told the January 6th Select Committee that former President Trump and members of his inner circle were very aware that his supporters that were at that rally were armed to the gills, pointing out that there were AR-15s, bear spray, flagpoles fashioned as spears, a whole lot more. And she said the president essentially was more concerned about crowd size.
I was in the vicinity of a conversation where I overheard the president say something to the effect of, you know, I don't effing care that they have weapons. They're not here to hurt me. Take the effing mags away. Let my people in. They can march to the Capitol from here. Let the people in. Take the effing mags away.
So there is
Let
a campaign
my people
now.
In.
Yeah, right? Right. Yeah, exactly. So there is a campaign now to discredit excerpts of her testimony. We'll get to that in a second. But I want to know for you what stood out.
What stood out was first of all the idea that there were people around Trump, including Cassidy Hutchinson, who were giving good advice, who were telling him to be responsible, who were telling him to back away from this thing, who were telling most of all to recognize you lost the election. Okay, the American thing to do is this peaceful transfer of power. You know what my favorite moment in that whole testimony was earlier this week.
What's that?
Was when they were doing showing part of Michael Flynn's testimony.
Oh,
and he
yeah.
was asked, do you believe in the peaceful transfer of power? And he said, Fifth Amendment.
After what was it, like 90 seconds, right? There was a 90-second pause.
Right. He wouldn't answer that he believed in the peaceful transfer of power. I mean, this is madness, and I think there's no question right now when you take a look at the polling. First of all, there are 13 million people who watched, which is a shocking, especially given the fact that it was not prime time. It was in the afternoon. And I believe it's having an impact, and that even some of the people who up until last week believed that Trump was the real winner of the election and the election was stolen, I think people are getting over that. And that's a healthy thing for the country.
And you know that there has been this campaign in, I guess you would say, Trump world. I've seen that phrase come out where people are pointing out to this particular. I'm just going to play a teeny tiny bit of it. But this is what Cassidy Hutchinson said also about something that happened in the SUV and it is being questioned now.
That knowledge opens
That's not it. That's not it. But you know that she had talked about how he was in the SUV.
He gets in the car after
right,
his speech.
Here it is.
The president said something to the effect of, I'm the effing president. Take me up to the Capitol now. To which Bobby responded, sir, we have to go back to the West Wing. The president reached up towards the front of the vehicle to grab at the steering wheel. Mr. Engel grabbed his arm, said, sir, you need to take your hand off the steering wheel. We're going back to the West Wing. We're not going to the Capitol. Mr. Trump then used his free hand to lunge towards Bobby Engel. And when Mr. Renato had recounted this story to me, he had motioned towards his clavicles.
So there are supposedly some anonymous sources who are saying this didn't happen, or her recollection is not what actually transpired, and that they are ready to testify.
Yeah, and there's also a video, which is sort of like the Zapruder video. You can break it down frame by frame. And the video's confirming. The video was released by the committee, by the January 6th committee. And what it shows, what you can see through the window of the SUV, is that there's a ruckus going on in the car. And you can see that there is an arm reached from the back seat. And we don't know that it's Trump's arm. You can't really tell because you can't see the orange hair. And it's basically just an arm reaching to the front. And the point about this is she acknowledged that she was not there. She didn't see this.
Yes.
Heard this from two people who were there at the time. Now those two people are saying, no, she got it wrong. This didn't happen. What they did acknowledge, and this is what is so telling, is that he was irate. They use that term. The president was furious that he was going back to the White House, that he wanted to go with them to the Capitol building. Yeah. And this, of course, raises the most profound question of all, is if Trump had gone to the Capitol building, as he told the people in the crowd, I'll be there with you, I'll be marching with you. He said three times he's going to march with them. So first of all, this shows, okay, he wasn't a liar. He really was his intention. But his intention is, what happens when he comes to the Capitol building? He's not supposed to be there. And the idea is that I can't even imagine that.
We could sit here and do this. She's under oath. And so it's interesting how people like to call her a liar when she's under oath. And the opposite of what could be said, they had the opportunity to get under oath. But I want to spend this time by asking you something very simple. Donald Trump I said this to you yesterday. He's 76 years old. He has never had to be accountable for any crime that in my opinion, that he's done. Right now, I do believe that there is enough evidence to put that man in handcuffs. Two questions for you. Number one, do you think it will happen? And if you do or you don't, why?
I don't mean to dodge the question.
That's fair.
I do think he is going to be stopped from running for president again, and that's the important thing.
Okay.
I mean, because there are enough suspicions and charges, and there are charges in Georgia, there are charges in New York State. The Georgia thing is serious as a heart attack. They have the president on phone and the telephone on tape, and they can't deny it, saying, I want you to find 11,374 votes. You know, this is to a Secretary of State of
and
the
they
state
also
of Georgia.
Testify.
And by the way, and that Secretary of State just got renominated. He won the Republican primary in his state, despite Trump spending millions of dollars to try to defeat him. The idea of making Trump accountable, it seems to me the one punishment that matters to him, and I think this is something where people will make a mistake. If people go after him, like criminal prosecution, this and that, it's not going to shake some of his diehard supporters. It just won't. And I think it would be a disaster. It would not simply assure some kind of Democratic victory. It would just be a disaster for our politics for him to run again.
But I think that is the problem, is that I think that our country, we're so focused on politics and not focused on what's right and what's best for the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what's best and what's right for the country is the man that was responsible for that coup actually being actually being held responsible for that. Isn't that a precedent going forward if we're going to be a country going forward for him to be held responsible?
You see, the difficulty here, and this is something that I lose sleep over. It's the kind of stuff I think about while I'm trying to go to sleep.
Okay.
Is if Trump gets indicted, there are a lot of smart people who think it would help him win the nomination again. because he would show himself as a victim. And, you know, in Trump world, there's a belief in monstrous conspiracies. After all, a lot of those people still believe in the QAnon stuff, that they're dueling evil child molesting, Satan-worshipping, children-murdering, blood-drinking perverts. And by the way, specifically have attacked Liz Cheney for her association with this conspiracy, even though she's not a Democrat. And the craziness that we're in right now is right now, after that testimony and after all the testimony before it, after all the material and all the experience, there are people who still believe the big lie. And they just did a University of Chicago poll released today. I'm going to be talking about it on air. Shows that 46% of Republicans, people who describe themselves as strong Republicans, say that we may have to resist the government under arms with an armed rebellion.
Oh, boy. Who did this?
Of Chicago.
Wow.
National Opinion Research Center. It's very credible. And they've never seen anything like this. And there, a third of Democrats think we may have armed need for armed rebellion in this country.
I hope it doesn't come to that. And as you said, there were a lot of people who did watch the testimony this week, and some minds were changed. And
no
so,
doubt.
I want to bring up, though, that Newsmax did interview President Trump, former president. And here he is talking about a possible Trump DeSantis ticket in 2024. And I want your take on that.
Well, I get along with him. I was very responsible for his success because I endorsed him and he went up like a rocket ship, like I endorsed Mary Miller the other day, who supposedly was not going to win and she won.
She won.
Just like Darren Bailey is doing great. He just won.
Yeah.
I think he's going to beat Pritzker, one of the worst governors of the country.
Do you think... Is there even talk in Republican circles about a DeSantis and Trump ticket?
There's no chance.
Won't happen. I mean, maybe DeSantis as president.
Yeah. DeSantis doesn't want to be Trump's running mate. I mean, given the Mike Pence's experience, would you want to be Trump's running mate? And again, it's that has to be – would be one of the toughest jobs in the world to ensure – a new vice president for Donald Trump, please. I think that there's a lot of talk and there's polling in New Hampshire and elsewhere that in a battle between DeSantis and Trump, and I'm not a DeSantis fan, but in that kind of battle, DeSantis would actually win.
Well, we always start talking about a two-party situation and an opportunity for independent. And when I think independent, I got to tell you, I think about the person that we have been seeing, Liz Cheney. Talk about your thoughts on Liz Cheney right now and what you have been seeing from her.
She is one of the two or three outstanding leaders in the country at the moment. And
I would
agree. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
and she brings people together across party lines because what you can see there is visible courage and visible integrity. Now, I think she had a debate last night with Harriet Hagedorn, who is her opponent in the primary in Wyoming. And the debate, it was one of those things. If there was a referee, he would have stopped the fight. I mean, it was very one-sided, and Liz was great. And she is really a remarkable person. And people talk about profiles and courage.
Very courageous.
Well, this is somebody who's willing to pass up what had been a very prominent career. She used to be the number three person in the House of Representatives. And she's going to have a tough primary. There is credible talk that she is thinking about making some kind of run for president because she's hearing that a lot. And there are a lot of people. Ursula, you and I were just talking about it. A Liz Cheney Adam Kinzinger ticket would have a very broad appeal.
I'm going to say I'm in.
That would be the. Don't you guys think that that would be the opportunity if an independent ticket were to ever have a chance of winning? That would be it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's exactly the ticket. I'm not sure how it works in terms of getting it. But I think people would, especially if it's Trump versus Biden. Again, a Trump versus Biden battle round two is so depressing to think about. That the country of 330 million. How about somebody a little bit younger than 76 or 79 as Biden is? And not to be an ageist, I'm hardly in a position to be. But the country is full of brilliant, promising people. There's one race that interests me, and Jeremy's going to kill me that I'm talking about this publicly and haven't before. But have you been following the Utah Senate race?
No.
Okay. I have not.
It's really amazing. Evan McMullen, who ran for president to give Trumpers, Republicans who were never Trumpers, someplace to go, and who actually ended up doing very well in the state of Utah. He is running for Senate as an independent against Senator Mike Lee, who has been very loyal to President Trump. And McMullen it's close, and he's running as an independent. The Democratic Party has endorsed him.
Wow.
Because they figure it's Utah. They have no chance of electing a Democrat. It's a very interesting situation, and he's a person of conscience. He's former – worked in the CIA at one point.
Oh, wow.
Anyway.
Before we get out of here, you brought up something. Liz Cheney, you've known her how long, Mike?
Since 1979.
What?
Since she was a little girl. Not quite a little girl, but she was not mature yet. I interviewed her father before he went to Congress, after mm-hmm. he was White House Chief of Staff for Gerald Ford. I did a book about White House Chiefs of Staff, and I got to know the Cheneys, both of them, Lynn and Dick. They're wonderful people. They're brilliant people. She's the finest biographer of James Madison. She has a PhD in history. And these are very impressive, patriotic, fine people, and I know how proud they are of their daughter.
When you say patriotic, that word gets a little cloudy these days.
But it does.
You know what I love, though? I would like to, you know, take it back and use it appropriately, and I would say that she strikes me as someone who would fit the description of true patriot.
Yes. Again, she's not in this to try to have a celebrity career. She doesn't need that. She's in it to serve the country, and God bless her for it.
Yeah, we need more of that.
Happy 4th of July, guys.
You too,
and
Michael.
Good to
thank
see you,
you,
Michael.
And congratulations, Mary G.
Ah, thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Marriage is great.
Yes, it is. Hey, coming up next on the G and Ursula Show, wait a minute. Is this still happening in 2022? A noose was found at a location here locally. We discuss that next. Gene Ursula.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show, our Fresh Fridays edition. And we've got an update about a story that we brought to you earlier this year. And we're now learning that an LGBTQ book that was pulled from the library of a Kent middle school is going to return to the shelf following a vote and a threat of a lawsuit. So this book is called Jack of Hearts and Other Parts, and it features a queer protagonist and some sexual situations. And there was a school board meeting earlier this week where people spoke in favor and against keeping the book.
I would argue that this book ban is perpetuating the culture that tells queer kids that it isn't okay to be who they are.
Ask yourself, would you read this to an 11-year-old grandchild that you know has been sexually molested?
Some people say these topics are too advanced for middle school students. I disagree. Young people at that age are becoming aware of their sexual identity, and they're certainly aware of bullying.
We do not need to be teaching them or entertaining them with pornography.
A book that makes one person feel uncomfortable, that doesn't mean you get to take it away from other people.
So the school board voted 2-1 to overturn the earlier decision to ban that particular book. And supporters were saying, you know, this can help teens and youth who have struggled with their sexuality. But there were other parents, as you heard, who said it's too much. It's too, you know, it put too many ideas in kids' heads. It is too sexually explicit. It's not appropriate for a middle school. Just curious of whether you would agree to keep a book like this. I mean, it's one of, I think, several books that the librarian chose.
I would agree to keep the book because I agree that way because I believe in being inclusive. I believe that all of our children should be loved no matter how or who or where they are from. And I just want to say this. I remember growing up as a kid and these discussions, and by the way, I'm a little older, right? So these type of discussions and how we talked about it, I'm embarrassed that I said negative things about those that were homosexual, about those that were different than me. And so here
but
I am.
It came from a place of ignorance.
Absolutely
in essence,
came
right?
from a place, mean, yeah, of, yeah. place of ignorance. But I'm sitting here in my lifetime, being young, maybe talking about, I cannot believe that this person doesn't like me because of the color of my skin. So why is it that I was upset about that, but yet I wasn't upset about people not being liked because of their sexuality? And so I think that more and more today, people are starting to remove that ignorance. People are learning more and more because it's being talked about. It's being celebrated, which it should, right? And so where I'm going with this is this. It breaks my heart for any young person to feel like they don't belong mm-hmm. because of who
other
they
than.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know what that's like. Me personally, even though I talk about a little bit of it, I've always been a person that has been able to succeed in public places because whether I was an athlete or really good at school or what, I've always been okay. But my heart breaks for those that aren't as outgoing, that are living a lie. They can't live their truth because they are embarrassed. Or then you have families that have lost family members because they have been living a lie and they couldn't take it anymore. And so my question is even if you don't understand, bring it from a place of maybe you don't understand and that's fine. Because truthfully, I don't understand because my sexuality isn't that way. But at the same time, don't you want to be empathetic towards others so that they can have a place to be?
Well, the other idea is, okay, if we have it in the library, this is going to be exposing to these kids to things that they shouldn't be seeing. I mean, I hate to say it, but if they have access to a phone or a computer, they have access to things that are much worse, quite frankly. Secondly, it's not like the library is populated with all these books. I mean, there are very specific books that were chosen that different review committees have said, you know what, these books can be helpful for children who may be, you know, not able to fully express who they are and can help them cope with those challenges that come along with that. And so I'm actually pleasantly surprised that they've brought it back.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like they heard from a lot of parents who were mostly in favor of bringing back. But
sure.
But I also understand that you want to protect your kids as much as possible. So I'm not.
When you say
I understand that some parents are coming at it with truly feeling like, you know, I'm worried about what my kids are being exposed to. But again, I would just say that the harm done by trying to ban a book like this is much more mm-hmm. than your kid potentially seeing something that maybe, you know, they're not ready to understand.
I just wish that there was a understanding nationwide that if I were to read a book to my child about a mom and a dad, a woman and a man, and there was a heterosexual relationship. If you believe that that is normal, fine. But you have to understand that basically what you're saying is if anybody else does not feel that same way, you are telling them that they aren't normal. And that is wrong. Right? You can't believe that just because you're reading a book that that is going to make you that way, or you're going to, don't read my child that book. I can read Baby G and Zion, my kids, millions of books right now.
Yeah. And quite frankly, if you do that, look, they're being exposed to books.
They're being exposed to books and people, yes, and different cultures.
Right.
Like, if you don't, you think that you're helping your child out by having, you're going to go in this community, you're going to go to this school, and you're not going to learn about anything. Because I can tell you what, if we take this discussion 50 years ago, 70 years ago, what are you saying about somebody black being on the airwaves? You're not liking this. What are you saying about somebody black drinking from the fountain, or using the restroom, or eating in the same restaurant? Come on now, everybody. We have got to get into 2022. It is time to stop the ignorance, please. All right. We didn't get to that news story because it was too much. Maybe we'll bring that up.
Yeah, well, it's being covered. It's being covered on our news side.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
All right. Hey, coming up next, it's time for scenarios. And I was going to do this one scenario. It's talking about, it's called the pregnancy jar. And I am going to do that because the Ursula's going to like it. We'll do that next. It's G and Ursula. Happy Fresh Fridays here on the G and Ursula Show. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it'll be time for Agree to Disagree. That's the time for Ursula and I to pull out the pillows and just start fighting with each other. But right now, let's get to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
My husband and I have been married for 6 years. We don't have kids, but do want them eventually. Both of our families are causing us constant stress about having a baby. We want them to all back off and have asked them to leave us alone about it and mind their own business, but they keep pushing. So since they wouldn't listen to our wishes, I set up an empty jar, labeled it the pregnancy jar. I carry it in my bag whenever I'm around family, and when someone asks when we're going to have a baby, I pull out the jar and ask them to put in a dollar. I got funny looks at first, but they always pay up. And it's actually worked because most of them stopped asking after a few months. Now, last week, we had dinner with my parents. My brother asked when we're going to have a kid. My husband paused. I got up from the chair and made my way to where my brother was sitting with my jar and asked him to drop a dollar. He stared at me, laughed nervously, and asked if I was being serious. Everyone was looking at us. He said he wasn't going to pay to talk to me. I said he's paying if he's talking to me about that particular topic. He felt embarrassed but put a dollar in my jar. It got awkward. Mom pulled me into the kitchen later to tell me that I embarrassed my brother in front of his wife and family and said I should quit acting childish about running around with the jar demanding others to put money in it. I told her that they should quit asking. She went on about how they're worried for us since we are in our mid-30s and don't have much time left if we want to have at least one healthy baby. My husband and I left and we haven't seen them since. Now everyone is upset with us and here we are. What do I do about this situation? I don't want the questions to start up again, but also I don't want to make enemies with my family. 888-973-9476 is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you're up to bat first.
So it sounds like, first of all, they have a close family, and I would have kind of a family meeting. Let's get together, keep the pregnancy jar at home, and let's have a talk and say, you know what, I understand that I hurt your feelings, but I want you to know that you hurt our feelings every single time you ask about when are you going to have a child.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so many people have become insensitive to the fact that there are some people who cannot have children very easily. And maybe they're trying, and you're making an assumption every time you ask, so when are you going to have a child? Putting pressure on a couple, regardless of age, I don't think is healthy. It's maybe funny the first, second, or maybe third time, but after that, it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have a family meeting and then just say, look, you know, can we just agree not to keep bringing this up? Mm-hmm. You know, eventually we want to have children. We understand that the clock is ticking, but it doesn't help, and it just makes us uncomfortable,
right,
for you to keep asking.
You know what, Ursula? As you know, I do appearances and I'm starting to do more motivational speaking.
Yeah.
And I learned something last week. I just finished a book and it was talking about having mentors. Now, usually when we have a mentor, usually the mentor is always older. It's someone who's been doing that profession or they have experience in things. Sometimes they say it's good to have, yes, the older mentor to maybe help you along the way, to give you and explain to you life's experiences. But it's also good to have younger mentors, meaning folks to kind of help you better understand what's going on current day. In this case, sometimes folks need that younger mentor to just say, hey, can we just stop with the whole, hey, so when are you guys going to have a baby?
Yeah.
Don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
This is not a nice question to ask. You don't know what's going on. There might be some medical situations that they don't, like you're saying, that you don't want to disclose.
Yes. Or maybe there are financial reasons, or maybe there are troubles in the marriage that you don't know about.
Right.
Either, you know, maybe there's a reason that they haven't done it yet. But you asking, it's like also you asking, like, so when are you going to start losing weight? When are you going to start? It's like, you know what? Really? I mean, there's just some questions. And I have been guilty. I will say I've been guilty of, hey, are you dating anybody? And I think I've got to stop that. I've got to stop that nonsense, especially when, you know, it's a friend who is, you know, still single and they're in their, you know, late 30s or whatever.
Yeah.
I think I shouldn't be asking that unless someone's willing to just share that with me. Like my niece, my goddaughter, one of my goddaughters, I know she just cringes when people ask, are you dating? It just puts an unnecessary pressure.
Yeah.
Because the answer right now is no. So how is she supposed to feel? Like, oh, you're not, you know, right? So, I mean, just wait for them to actually offer that to you instead of pressing them on it.
I'm glad we're having this discussion because it's the holidays coming up. And you got
yes.
family. You're going to be around family. And what the Gia and Ursula Show wants to do, we want to protect you from going there and ask. So write this down. Don't ask. So when you're getting married, don't do it. So when you gonna have a baby? Mm-mm, don't do it. So when you gonna get a job? Well, maybe you can ask that.
But even the way you're asking, so when, it's already a judgment, right?
Yeah, you know, good point. Like,
but if you say, hey, what have you been up to? What, you know, or whatever,
and
or
let
anything
them,
new,
let them
anything
ask.
New going on in your life, say, hey, I've just started a new job, blah blah blah, or whatever. Or if they don't, you know,
yeah.
And also depends. Obviously, how close you are to someone. But there are just certain questions that you know are going to rub people the wrong way.
Right.
She's already made it clear with the pregnancy jar. Like, why keep asking?
Yeah.
And with this jar, too, I'm just thinking the family members asking, just battering them with the questions of the pregnancy, they're going to start to feel bad when they have the one-on-one talk with the couple saying, hey, let's back up on the pregnancy talk. They're going to sneak up in the jar being like, what are you talking about? I didn't say that. There's no money in there. Just make it easier on yourself. Let's not ask these questions, not fill the jar with any money, all right?
Oh, Texas Freight said, gee, when are you having a baby? Come on, man.
Put a dollar in there.
That's a dollar. You know, but I want to say, you're not the only one that's been guilty. I've been guilty, too. And you just think, oh, new couple. Okay, so you guys just got married. So when are you going to have a baby? You know, you're just trying to make discussion, conversation.
Yeah, I know. It's innocent. So, but when you know now it is a sensitive topic and you still do it.
Yeah.
Then it's no longer innocent.
Yeah, good point.
Okay, still ahead.
Yeah.
Agree to disagree.
And you know, fireworks. Should fireworks be left to the professionals? We talk about the next. Gia and Ursula. Then who stole it?